Tell us some specific spiritual experiences you had before you were a believer.
Well, it started in my childhood because my dad was a diplomat in London, and we had a housemaid who worked for Medium. And I wanted a Ouija board. She told me all about it. So I challenged my dad, who was an atheist, going to work, could I have a Ouija board? He brought it, actually an antique planchette. That was the door opener because what I noticed were presences in my room all of a sudden. So a year later at 11, I had out-of-the-body experiences a couple of times. It happened when I got the mumps in London, and we were firing through the ceiling, kind of looking down, and thinking, wow, that's interesting. And then, you know, a year later, we're on home leave, and I looked up this book called Case for Bridie Murphy about a woman from Ireland who is remembering a former wife. With all the details, they all worked out. I thought, wow, that's interesting. So there are a bunch of trails, you know, crumbs on the trail that led me down an occult pathway. I mean, I, at an early age, was fascinated with horror, vampires, werewolves, anything supernatural. I can tell you where it comes from. Growing up in an atheistic family, it was so empty, it was so hollow. I thought, there's got to be more than this. So in many ways, I see my life as an early run to what we're seeing on a mass scale now, out of a secular atheistic culture where people are saying, do you think there might be more than just this flat tabletop here, you know, of atheism and secularism and unbelief? So I think big doorways opened for me, and ultimately, I mean, as you well know, LSD, mind-altering drugs, changing mind states, ultimately set me up for a trip to India to take this thing the whole way. So it was an early exposure for me in occult, mystical, supernatural stuff. And once the hook, once you launch, get the hook, the hunger, the fascination for the occult keeps ramping up.
So how old were you when you first were curious about things spiritual?
Before nine, as I got some of the horror comics are like today's board games that, you know, let us show you how to use the Ouija board, or let us show you how to be a sorcerer. So all of these comic books opened some serious doorways for me.
Now, when you walked through some of those little doorways, did you discover something that made you more hungry?
Yeah.
Or was it just empty and this... What happened?
What happened in my case is that it was deeply fascinating, very interesting. When you don't have a family that believes in God and you don't go to church, my dad was an atheist, it was, to me, very empty. Life was very empty, and suddenly these things fall right in your path. And in my case, I had a tremendous interest.
A spiritual component? Did it provide a spiritual component for you?
I think in a manner of speaking, it was a counterfeit spirituality. And you know, Augustine said that man is a God-shaped vacuum. And suddenly you run into these things, and they seem to give you more meaning to life than just pure atheism, which is a very depressing worldview, you know. So, yeah, I would say doors opened. If I were to go way back to probably the first door, my dad was in a writer's colony in Haiti, and they took me to a voodoo ceremony at a very young age. I must have been 3 or something. And I think that something happened there. I think a door opened there, and that was probably the first doorway. And, of course, being a secular humanist, they would not see anything to be worried about in these primitive, superstitious things like voodoo. But I think a door could have opened.
Were your parents at all worried about some of the experiments you were getting into?
No.
Because why?
Because to them, I think they had been readers of Dr. Spock that basically said he was a liberal child psychologist doctor who just said, let your kid do his own thing. He'll grow up all right. I think a lot of parents of that generation who didn't want to take responsibility for their kids, a great way to rationalize and sort of toss them on the woodpile is to say, hey, let them do their own thing. They're going to come out of it fine. And if there's any way that I came out of it fine, and we'll go into that later, in India, it was with God's help. That's the only way I came out of that.
And tell us about India. Why did you go to India?
Well, I went to India because after all the occult stuff, the out-of-the-body experiences, the reading the gurus, the final step to recapture what I thought had been pure enlightenment in that LSD thing become permanent.
Did you find enlightenment?
No, I didn't find enlightenment at all. The only enlightenment I found was to get the heck out of there. I mean, that was the enlightenment I found. The whole thing was bogus. I mean, it's based... Later I realized the whole thing was based on the Genesis 3 lie, you will be as God, repeated 20 trillion times across history. I'm receiving that, you'll be as God. Oh, really? Can you also sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, by the way? You know, that was the level it was on. It was a real bad one. So what had happened at that point, I mean, I got lower and lower, and I really think that I was being set up for being possessed. I think that was the thing. Ego death, and then we fill the empty husk here with a different soul. I was in a continual civil war of between what I was picking up and what I hoped to be true, and then the test of loyalties to hang on no matter what, you know. But there have been enough people who've fallen away, and my book certainly blew out a large populace of India in terms of disillusioning them to his so-called divine stature. You know, a divine guy doesn't do that.
Let's go back to the 60s and 70s when college students were rebelling and were searching. What did the Jesus movement do to stem the tide of that searching?
Well, I think you had a lot of hungry people who... It's like the line out of The Graduate, you know, where the guy says, son, if you want a future, get into plastics, okay? And a lot of them saw through that. And they saw through the corporate lie, they saw the manipulation, they saw the emptiness of the life driven by greed and manipulation and aggressiveness. They saw through that. It's got to be more than this. And what had happened through the whole psychedelic thing is what happened to me. There was a big mystical doorway. The Indian gurus were coming over here. We had rock music that was just blowing the roof off, you know, very powerful messages coming through that. A lot of the old paradigms were falling away, marriage, da-da-da-da, let's live with a girl next door, let's go to a BN and pick someone up and then take acid or get stoned. I think there's a huge number of these people who are all of a sudden ripped out of the context and they're free-floating and they're open, and I think a lot of them found that it didn't give what it promised them. I think there were a lot of damaged goods in this time, you know. And they were open up saying, okay, well it's got to be truth somewhere, right? I mean, doesn't truth exist? And I think what had happened is the Jesus movement found a way to package the gospel, communicate it in a way they could hear it. And I think there was an explosive acceptance among a lot of people. I mean, and of course, top of that would be Chuck Smith, founding Calvary Costa Mesa, baptizing thousands, literally, in the Pacific, and being able to communicate to these people. And Chuck is not a phony. I mean, he is a very rare man of integrity and strength. He's a man's man. And I think one reason he and I hit it off, we had a real connection. I thought, God knows why me, but I think he's a rare soul, and I think he authentically was able to talk truth, able to take the inerrancy of the Bible, the perennial truths of Scripture, and I think God just carried it in waves. I just think it went out.
It seems to me, just give me your input on this, that it was the ultimate countercultural wave, okay? Counterculturalism here in this town and around California University was huge. But then from another side comes this wave, this tide of real counterculturalism, dressed in hippie garb in many ways, very unconventional, but it just sort of like impacted that wave of counterculturalism.
Well, it was the Stan Owsley LSD pill hitting the social scene. I mean, everyone got obliterated. And I think making the world of their parents in the sort of middle class houses seem like nothing. It was electric and it never to be repeated. And I think we saw creativity explode then in rock bands, and It was all the false heroin high of you can sin and be above it. Okay, it was a big heroin high, the whole thing. And it hit, I mean, I remembered hitting. It hit very hard. And everything was upended. I think, you know, they use the word dysfunctional family, but I think there's always been this thing of the, quote, misunderstood generation who can't connect with their parents. And I think there was a lot of that. So I think that the timing, I think there are many facets to the timing of this whole countercultural explosion. The downside is that it led into what's become postmodernism. That's another thing, the whole rift, it created things that have helped destroy America, too. It was character debilitating, the same way that if you run a clinic to get people off of addiction, whether it's alcohol or heroin or whatever, you see them gutted. There's something, you get empty husks that look like zombies. I mean, they look like the vampires drain them. Time to give them more life here. Okay, So you do see that out of the 60s thing, and the really grim mementos around here in Berkeley and People's Park are the husks of people who, I call it the failed experiment. They took it the whole way. They tried the STP and the LSD and living, cohabiting with 30 different people, and they end up looking like someone out of a vampire movie, you know. I mean, we've got... The dispossessed homeless street people are the greatest turnoff to present-day Berkeley students, and it basically says, hey, this was the experiment that failed. We're not going to go down that road. Sadly, they're now taking the pragmatic money's the bottom line road. You know, let's not look for truth, forget idealism. There is that side that's going on in today's youth.
High-tech spellcasting, what is that?
Well, you know, Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World. And Brave New World projected a time in the future where you could literally simulate reality. We now call it virtual reality. Where he called it talkie-feelies. You take the person and immerse them in any world you want. And we're getting there. And basically high-tech spellcasting or the really front-end digital interactive games right now, like the World of Warcraft and the new Dungeons and Dragons and all these things where you've got it on the screen of your computer and it's now 3D and it's now pretty high resolution and you're interactive and you get lost in this world. And you can also do that on the internet with other players. So you can get lost. I mean, that's the spell casting, especially if it's occult. If you're getting into the occult, and some of these things are occult, like, you know, the magic game, then you're going to learn stuff that would take you volumes to read in an old, dusty, occult bookstore. But you're now learning how to put a spell on this guy and to manipulate reality here, and you're going to learn about shamanism and sorcery, and it's a real door.
But it, you call it a door. Others say it's just a game.
It's just like a book. Well, just a book, right? Or it's just a movie, right? But it'll influence people like nothing you've ever seen. Because it's interactive, even more than sitting passively and watching Twilight or Harry Potter, which are really explosive. These are dynamite films in more ways than one. If you're interacting with it, it's an even higher learning curve, okay? And becomes part of your whole repertoire, becomes part of your interior knowledge. It becomes a Gnostic thing, because it's a hidden knowledge there. And I think the sky's the limit. I think soon we're going to be in pure virtual reality. As computer chips grow in size, we're going to have people getting, and little Johnny doing what I did with the Ouija board, but blowing away what I did as a 10-year-old kid, because he's in the full immersive thing, and spirits are popping out and guiding the planchette, and former relatives are coming forward saying, I'm glad you contacted me, tell your dad such and such. I mean, I think we could see that. So what we could be facing is an occult revival.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tal, you have been researching counterfeit revivals and movements for a number of years. And currently you're writing about the whole vampire resurgence.
Big time.
What have you found? Tell us what you've discovered.
Big time. Well, they've just taken off. I mean, Harry Potter was a big thing. And you're hearing author's envy here. I am envious of what J.K. Rowling has done. And then this thing turned into a super series. She sends out copies of the manuscript, it takes off like a rocket. Why? Probably because, like me as a kid, looking for more than just this, they are fascinated with the power and immortality and the sexual license, not in her book so much, but on TV like True Blood. This is a wide open thing. So the vampire thing has taken off. I thought I'd do a short article. It's turned into an enormous article. I had to stop. I don't want it to become a book, but vampires have absolutely taken off in the public imagination.
You mentioned a term, seduction. You were seduced. Describe for us what the media does in terms of a spiritual seduction. Boy. How can one be seduced through the media?
That's kind of what they do. I mean, you go back to the rabbit ear TV, you know, going back 60 years, black and white TVs. If you jump every decade, I think the media has changed the public mind over 50 times, whether it's making gay marriage okay now, or it's just been pushing the moral envelope unopposed for, you know, every decade you leap in. You know, they made the gay thing accepted in Europe. They're opening the door for bestiality. The point is that media is overwhelmingly powerful. Look, they can do it in 15 seconds. They can get through to you. If they can do that in 15 seconds, a program that lasts an hour, where you get into the characters, is going to suck you in. And there is no more seductive character than a vampire. Their whole thing is seduction. That's it. They seduce. So it is a major door opener. And it just goes way beyond the imagination of most Christians to even challenge this.
How are they drawn in spiritually?
Some of this we can see and some we can't, because we may be dealing with some other dimensions here, because the supernatural is real. In the same way God is real, Christ is real, demonic things are real. So it could be that there's a digital analog to the planchette, the Ouija board, and all the things people have been using in the occult world, and that the whole digital doorway is a lot more powerful. We may find that out, okay? But it certainly can change your mind, your hungers.
Tell us the meaning of America's search for an alternative God.
Well, America's search for an alternative God, I saw flipping the gear when I got back from India. When I had seen all this weirdness there, and all of a sudden, especially on the West Coast, especially in Berkeley, you see people who are opening every doorway, okay? And remember, G.K. Chesterton made the point that when people cease believing in God, they'll believe in anything, okay? And we're getting to that point with the search for alternative God. There's even a parade in Berkeley called How Berkeley Can You Be? And they proposed a pink bunny rabbit God, okay? So we're in serious trouble. When you've abandoned the true faith, then it's open season, and therefore, especially with the secularists, whatever is the flavor of the month, whether it's avocado or purple, they're going to go that direction. So the search for the alternative God becomes political correctness. It becomes the multicultural mandate. It becomes actually anti-Christian, because right now, the Christian option is X'd out. They're saying, we're not interested in that. What else do we have? Well, it's going to run into all the New Age gods. It's going to go into the different gurus on TV, the different people that Oprah Winfrey talks about. So it's a wide open area, and this is a disaster zone. And it's been because a nation that refuses, actually, here's the catcher, that refuses to be under the real God, if he wants to grab another God, is actually going to be under a tyrant meaner than he can ever imagine. Down the road, it's going to be a tyrant. So this is where we're heading. We're heading into a police state right now. We've already started shredding the Constitution. Our dollars are being printed without backing. We're trillions of dollars in debt. We are being imploded, and that is part of the New World Order. America's search for the alternative God is another way to take down the foundation of what this once great Christian republic was. And so it's like there's nothing blocking it. We're wide open to attack. It's like, you know, you're going to India and drinking virus-laden water with hepatitis, and you know something? Skip's going to get hepatitis again. And we're doing the same thing with all our checks and balances, all our protections in America. And so connected with our freedom as Christians, we need that Constitution.